time, a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast is upon your listening ears.
Yes.
And as always, this is Mark.
This is Matt.
And we are here to bring you a new... Ow! I just slammed my knee into the podcast.
Some people just like torture.
That loud bang on the show there. It wasn't a good kind of bang.
It was the old knee.
Yeah. Man, my knee already hurts. I slammed it on the table last night. It's like... Oh,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Sounds romantic.
No, it wasn't that.
No?
It was clumsiness more than anything.
You didn't have your leg over the table and you were in that locomotion?
No, man. I'm too fat and old to do that kind of stuff anymore. You know, it's just like, just straight up, let's go. And
yeah,
that's it, you
know. Find a bed or a couch, something comfy, and yeah.
You know, no more acrobatics and all that. How's your week been?
So far, so good. It's been up and down, kind of. You know, we had Halloween, and
we were both off work.
Yeah, we're both off work. Yeah. So we are well rested. As far as I know,
you would think.
Yeah,
we both have three kids. There's no such thing as well rested.
Yeah, I thought we were gonna get away with some extra sleep today. It didn't happen.
No.
Kids still woke up usual time. But yeah, Halloween was super rainy. Unfortunately, we didn't get as much trick-or-treating done as we wanted to, but some kids still showed up, and we were still able to scare the hell out of some kids, and, you know, it was all fun for what it was. Hopefully everyone, you know, got home safe. I know a lot of places flooded here and there.
Yeah.
And some power outage.
I remember raining last year. I realized that was 3 years in a row it rained on Halloween. I just don't, for some reason, remember it raining 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But they said that was 3 years in a row we've had rain on Halloween.
Yeah.
And so maybe they should move it to November 1st, because November 1st, it's always beautiful out the next day.
Yeah. I blame my wife's family for, like, jinxing Halloween. Like, we got... I tell you about that link that we got sent about so Jackie's... my wife's mom and her aunt are, like, sending us this link about this pastor... that used to practice Santeria, and he starts off, you know, it's the link's titled "Why You Shouldn't Celebrate Halloween," and they're like, "Oh, well, the pumpkin."
These are going around through text messages or something, or email,
Facebook Messenger. Oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
You don't open that kind of stuff.
And she's like, I'm opening it up. It's a YouTube video link, and this guy's like, "Yeah, first of all, the pumpkin is Santeria." It's like, we use the pumpkin in rituals of Santeria. So you bring that pumpkin into your house.
Well, you said
you're
bringing something a little bit about that house. The last episode. That was a vegetable.
And so, so I followed up with that by buying some pumpkin pie and some whipped cream. And I shared it to my Snap story. I was like, I let the pumpkin into my house. And I sent it to her mom. She didn't say anything. I was like, I tried to poke fun, but she wasn't. She didn't play. But I was like, it's just ridiculous to me. I'm like, everyone had fun. The devil, you know, didn't show up or anything like that. So, I guess it was a good Halloween. Got some candy left over, so that's always good. Didn't have to raid the kids' stuff too hard. So, with the lack of turnout, we had extra stuff left over. And then it's been cool, and then it's been warm, and now it's rainy again. Typical Houston, I guess. Different phases of the weather just coming at us, you know, through different days. But, so far so good. Hopefully I get to go to Showboat tonight. The wife really wants to see Nutcracker. The other screen at the Showboat, it's showing Halloween and Venom, and I don't think I'm going to get to watch that, so
no.
Unfortunately.
Well, not if you're taking the kids.
Yeah,
probably
not
if you're taking watch
the kids.
Halloween. No.
Yeah, probably not. Venom, maybe. Not Halloween.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, my week, took the kids out trick-or-treating. We fought a little bit of a rain shower, but we made it through. They hit some streets, got some good candy. They're loaded up on sugar now for the next foreseeable future. And, but they had a good time, it's Halloween.
That's Halloween.
You know,
we
talked a lot of Halloween last month, and by the way, for people that don't know, since last we recorded, we put out a secret episode on Halloween.
Yes.
We did Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and we talked about the legacy of Universal Pictures and their classic films, and talked of some other favorite Halloween moments of ours on the show. So it's on your podcast apps now. Go listen to that. It was a special Halloween episode that we did just for fun. It was the first time we ever did a secret episode. But now we're moving on. As we move forward, we've got some really exciting stuff planned for the rest of the year. Leading into 2019, as we get close to 150 episodes, we're going to have a 50th anniversary show. We will be at Compalooza again this year in May coming up. doing a podcast there at Comicpalooza. So a lot of exciting things. Really some really exciting movies to talk about coming up.
Oh, yeah.
A really special two-parter we're going to be doing in December, which, you know, if you follow us on Instagram or any of our social media, I put up a photo with things to come, so there's a slight hint in there as to what that two-parter is. And one of those things to come is a movie we're going to be talking about here today. So a lot of exciting things coming up on the Rebel Radio podcast. So we hope you stick with us and enjoy. Listen, let's talk about these classic and retro films we really enjoy and some things. So, but before we get going today's movie, though, let's do as we always do and start the show with Download This, which is where we tell you what we streamed, downloaded, or watched this past week. I'm sure you probably watched it a lot more than I did, being that you somehow you manage that. I don't know how you find time to binge things when you have three kids. I'm lucky if I can sit down for a couple hours and watch something.
I told my wife that I was going to binge watch Daredevil season 3. She told me to come to bed. I said, no, I have at least two more episodes.
She must not have been naked then.
She was not naked. She was not. In fact, she actually apologized for not putting out as much this week. And I was surprised. I'm like, wow. Okay, that's the first time I've ever heard you apologize for not doing that. She's like, yeah, you were off, didn't put out much. I was like, sorry. Okay.
Whoa. Well,
yeah, you
what
can
the hell?
Make it up later, I guess. I don't know. Okay. But
did someone clone Jackie and replace her?
Yes, with a robot.
I love your family, but that just doesn't sound like her.
It doesn't. You know, she's like, whatever. Or she'll use it, you know, typical, use it against you. You ain't,
well,
you don't come to bed right now.
Yeah.
But I didn't get to watch all 13 hours straight, but I did watch 8 hours straight in a row. I started too late, and then I had to get some sleep because it was already like 2:30 in the morning, almost 3. And so I sleep for about, you know, 4 hours, get up, you know, get my son to the bus stop, and then I come right back in, make some breakfast, sit down, and crank out the other 5 hours. And then I was done by lunch. So, I in a 24-hour period, you know, I spent more than half the time watching Daredevil. It didn't disappoint. I like their depiction of Bullseye. Really good twist at the end. It ends happy, you know, they twist it. Yeah. It's really cool. You know, there's a lot of different things that and a lot of different characters that they're able to elaborate on. They go through the different layers to these characters, and they're able to develop them pretty well. You know, I thought it was pretty impressive.
I'm through episode 6, and of all the things that Marvel Studios, Marvel Television have done in the last 10 years since we started with Iron Man, I've enjoyed the movies a lot, but like, I really, really like Daredevil quite a bit. It might be one of my top 2 or 3 favorite things they've done, period. I will finish the season. I'm a little slower. It might take me another week or two before I finish it, but I'll get done. I've heard that it ends with a cliffhanger, but yet if we don't get a 4th season, it's kind of wraps things up too.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, we know they canceled Iron Fist and Luke Cage. As far as I know, they're making season 3 of Jessica Jones, and a lot of people say the way they end Daredevil, you have to hopefully at least get a few more episodes to finish it. Like, I've heard, like, ideas of at least doing 2 or 3 episodes to finish up a few loose ends they leave at the end.
Yeah, they do. They do mention Jessica Jones in there, you know, once.
That's,
I think, in the last episode, they mentioned Jessica Jones's business.
Yeah.
And that's it. So, you know, maybe, you know, if maybe we see Daredevil and Jessica Jones season 3, who knows?
Yeah.
But I definitely think that this is their strongest play, you know, with their streaming service you know, they've got to continue with Daredevil.
And it's been the best show out of the 4 easily. There's
absolutely
no doubt about that. And you know, it's really well done. Charlie Cox took a bit to grow on me, but now I don't see anyone else as Daredevil.
Yeah.
Some really great casting. I can't think of her name, but the lady who plays Karen Page is perfect in the role.
Oh, yeah.
Foggy Nelson, he's good casting, just all around. You know, it's been a great show.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I agree. Yeah, the casting's been a very strong point because, you know, Vincent, you know, has done a really good job as Kingpin. And, you know, he continues on just showing you that he's a really good Kingpin. Yeah.
And Jeff Loeb is in charge of Marvel Television, and he's written some of the best comic stories we've had in the last 20 years. So he understands these characters and what it takes. And I think that's why I'm not sure how much say he has as a producer in the casting. I would imagine he has quite a bit, but he's pinpoint accuracy of what he's done. And, oh, the same with Kristen Ritter. She's perfect as Jessica Jones. Mike Coulter was a great Luke Cage. I know Finn Jones is taking some flack for Iron Fist, you know, but I still think he was fine with what he had.
I think he was okay. I think if you just had some better choreography in there.
Better writing, too.
Yeah, better writing, then you'd be all right. Yeah. But, it's, it's glad to see that at least Daredevil has been good. And, if you haven't gotten started on the series, you got to get started because it's friggin' awesome and it's worth it. Yeah.
So anything else this week that you've watched or just binged Daredevil?
Not really. I think I may have flipped through some old films. I think I watched what horror movie did I try and start to watch? I watched Pet Sematary. Yeah, I watched Pet Sematary. I think a lot of people have seen Pet Sematary.
I guess there's a remake coming out of it, apparently. I saw a poster or something the other day. I was like, really?
I like the old man in that movie, Herman Munster. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that pops over there.
Honestly, that's one I don't think I've ever really watched.
I'll tell you a story one time. It's like Pet Sematary. How about you? You anything else other than Daredevil?
I did watch a movie that my friend Naomi's been getting on me about. I finally sat down and watched Halloween. And I posted on Facebook about it, and I'm sorry to disappoint, but like I didn't think it was that great.
I remember this conversation.
I know people think it's a masterpiece, and I get certain parts of it. Like, I'll give it some credit as far as story development. It's better story development wise than say a Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th, where it's like let's get to the slasher really quick.
Yeah,
they do build it a little bit more, and I totally get the idea of tension building and story building. I understand all that. So when Michael Myers does finally kill, you have this tension built up to it. But there's things that I didn't like about it. And it has something to do with it being a 40-year-old film. I can appreciate old films. But it's slow. Nothing happens for the first 45 minutes except Michael breathing creepily. Jamie Lee Curtis with some really just bad conversations with her friends. So the dialogue is not well written in parts. John Carpenter, who I think is an excellent director, but he almost overuses his theme music in this to a point where it's just like, it's like watching the early Bond films where every time an action scene came on, the Bond theme came on.
Yeah.
And I guess this is a product of that era, so I understand that. So he uses the theme a lot, but it was almost annoying. It's like, okay, we get it, the theme song. You came up with this wonderful piano idea. Okay, we got it. So there's just things that, and maybe that's being nitpicky, but I found that a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I can see that.
Also, and my our friends over at Matinee Heroes, Craig and Alan, they recently covered this movie. And I haven't finished the episode. I started it. So first half is a Q&A with the guy who directed the stand. Oh, I don't know his name. Mike something. But so an excellent Q&A with him in the second half they talked the movie. So I still have to finish the episode. But Craig commented on my Facebook that he had some of the same thoughts I did. Like, Michael is evil. We get it.
Yeah.
And he kills his sister when he's young, right? And so he comes back to this town 15 years later, but they've taken him to a sanatorium that's 150 miles away. Why drive all the way back? They never say why. There's no motivation to it other than he's just evil because the psychiatrist says that he's evil or he believes that he's pure evil. So if you're just pure evil, you just want to kill, what is your motivation for driving 150 miles? There's no motivation to it. I guess they retcon it in some of the sequels where I guess maybe Jamie Lee Curtis was related to him, I guess, apparently.
In number two, they make her his sister.
Then they retcon it again with a new one, I guess, and she was just a former babysitter.
They make it number three, he's not even in it except for like a television, and then they try and make him like this aberration. And then, in five, she like decapitates him.
And then
And then they try and reboot it.
With H2O.
Yeah, with H2O, and she dies.
Now they've retconned it again where the sequels don't even exist, and I guess in the new one, she turned out that she was a former babysitter of his, is what someone was telling me.
I guess.
But, that doesn't make sense because she's supposed to be 18, 19 years old in the original.
I wonder if someone just skipped through the part of the script where they were supposed to tie her into things.
So there's continuity issues with it. So I didn't hate it. I can think of three other John Carpenter films off the top of my head I like more. The Thing, Escape from New York, and Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
But I didn't really care for it. I honestly don't think I'll ever watch it again. I watched it once. I got Halloween watched. I don't think... I'm just more of a Freddy Krueger guy. I'd probably reach for that instead, yeah. Because I just think it's fun.
Freddy.
That's just me. But at least I watched it, Naomi, so give me some credit. Yeah. I watched it. It was okay. I just didn't think it was that great.
Michael Myers doesn't pop into a room and say, "It's showtime, bitch," and then slash you.
And it's kind of really just kind of creepy how he's just standing and he's breathing. And it's just like, it's like, dude, calm down, man. I don't know. It was okay,
Oh, you know what else I watched? Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. I did watch.
With Dennis Hopper?
It's got Dennis Hopper, and it's so stupid.
I heard it's terrible.
He goes into it. There's a chainsaw fight with Leatherface at the end, and Dennis Hopper hops in with this big ass chainsaw, and then Leatherface has this big ass chainsaw, and then he has two smaller chainsaws with holsters on his hips, and they have a big ass chainsaw fight. And it's just ridiculous.
It sounds absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and then at the end, the girl kills the brother, Chop Top, and with the chainsaw that is stuck to its skeleton, somehow it starts. And then she does a little chainsaw dance, too, and an ode to Gunnar Hansen, who was the first Leatherface and did that chainsaw dance at the end.
Right.
And it's just really stupid. But it's got Dennis Hopper in it, so...
Yeah. And Teen Titans Go is played on my television, the movie.
Yeah.
Since I bought it for the boys on Tuesday, and I think they've probably watched it 6 times.
Damn. And I've only had to watch it twice.
Wyatt this morning was even asking. I'm like, no, not today.
Teen Titans!
Yeah.
Teen Titans.
It's a fun movie, but I don't want to watch it every day, So, it's like you need a break from
things. Alien princess in the alien attire. The Titans.
The song.
I know. But it's catchy.
There's even sing-alongs on the Blu-ray if you really want to sing along.
Really? I can go home after this and sing along?
I'm sure you'll buy your stuff on Vudu, so I'm sure the special features.
It's got to be on there. There's always... Yeah, Vudu usually especially if you pre-order, you get those packets.
And even with a digital copy, I've noticed that sometimes it takes a few days for it to... Like, you'll put your digital copy in, the movie will be there... Special features sometimes don't show up for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Because I think they have to download to that you bought it, So, Teen Titans Go.
Yes.
Fun movie.
Slade.
Quite a different movie than the one we're talking about today. We go from kid movie to a dark, rated R science fiction film.
Yes.
And our feature film today is 19... Well, it's interesting. The official release date was in theaters was February of 1998, but it had like a very limited release in late 97 in a couple of cities. And the movie was supposed to be out as early as summer of 97. And it kind of kept getting pushed back a little bit. And we're talking the Alex Proyas directed Dark City, which was originally going to be called Dark World and Dark Empire.
Yeah.
And they settled on Dark City. I guess it had its debut at a film festival, I think it was, in late 97.
Yeah, it was at an Amsterdam film festival, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the movie, Alex Proyas began production on this shortly after he finished The Crow.
Yeah.
He came up with the idea, actually, while filming The Crow, the idea of the cities moving around when he saw set designers moving sets around The Crow. And he started working on the script and everything and developing it. And the script went through several changes before it got made, but we'll get to that. But for those that don't know, hopefully you've seen Dark City. It's a really, really highly underrated science fiction film. Really, really good
movie. Yeah, it really is.
And 20 years later, hopefully a lot of people have seen it. It stars Kiefer Sutherland, Rufus Sewell, who plays the main actor, the beautiful Jennifer Connelly, has William Hurt in it, and several other good character actors, like, was it Burt? What's his name?
Oh, from
the Road Warrior.
Oh, I thought you were.
Well, they also had
Rocky Horror Picture
Rocky
Show.
Rocky Horror Picture Show. Richard O'Brien.
Yep.
Yeah, and
Brian Richardson
and Bruce Spence, who was in the Road Warrior.
Yeah, the fire bomber.
So a lot of good actors, and actually Alex Proyas wrote the part of Mr. Hand for Richard O'Brien specifically. So in this movie, it opens up where we see. Well, we have Kiefer Sutherland at the beginning doing something. We don't really know what he's doing. He's just sort of walking and...
Yeah, just walking through the streets.
And then it opens up where we see a murder, or we see Rufus Sewell open. His character is John Murdoch, and he wakes in a bathtub, and he's naked. He doesn't know what's going on. He's confused, not sure.
And then you see his ass. You see, yes, you see Rufus Sewell's ass.
You know, and this is Rufus Sewell before he was known. Now he's on The Man in High Castle and on Amazon Prime, and he gets a lot of rave for this.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of his early roles, and he's actually really good in this.
Yeah, he is.
You believe he's this guy, he doesn't know what's going on, and he's confused, and he wakes up, and he walks in the room, and there's a dead body in there, a girl is killed, and he's totally confused at this point. And he walks out, and he
gets a phone call from Keither. He's like, I'm Keither Sutherland's character, Dr. Schreiber, who is based off of the person who wrote a novel that inspired this book, Memoirs of My Illness. And so Schreiber calls him, lets him know, hey, your memory has been erased. There was a procedure. There's been an accident. What you need to know now is there are people coming for you. You need to get out of the room. And so he starts, you know, walking out of the room, and we see the strangers come up from the elevator, and he takes off before they see him, and they enter the room. So he comes downstairs, and everyone's comatose. It's midnight. Everyone's comatose. And as he's walking down, walking past the bookie at the front, everyone wakes up. Mr. Murdoch! He's like, you know, the guy's telling him he left your wallet at the automat. You know, only thing that makes you a customer is cash on the barrel head. So he wants his money. And, so Murdoch, he goes to the automat and he tries to piece together what's going on. He gets to the automat and he recovers his wallet, and he's met by a hooker, and he goes up to the hooker's room. Meanwhile, things are going around at the same time. The bookie
a lot going on. In fact, it set a record at the time for cuts in a film. There's like a cut every 2 seconds.
Yeah,
apparently.
And I just realized that. I'm like, wait. I was like, but the bookie, you know, he went upstairs, and they're like, where's Murdoch? And so he's like, oh, he walked down the door not 5 minutes ago. And so now the strangers have to find Murdoch, who's at the automat. And he, you know, now there's an investigation going on. Bert's character gets there, and he plays the detective.
Well, and then you watched the theatrical version probably.
In
the director's cut, which I watched, we don't even know they're called the strangers yet, because the director's cut, which we'll talk about a little bit, actually takes out that opening narration where Kiefer Sutherland tells you everything.
Really?
And it makes it for a better film because it alludes to a mystery
of who
these people are for a while.
Yeah.
And it's okay that you watch that version. Most people are probably more familiar with the theatrical version.
Yeah, and I know why he did that, because he wanted you to be as confused as John Murdoch was.
And Proyas was against... Proyas did not want the narration. The studio made him add that in there.
Yeah.
So as soon as he got the opportunity to make a director's cut, he took it out because the original vision was... Like you said, you wanted the audience to be as confused as you were as what was going on.
In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why it was pushed back, because they kept telling him, oh, you know, there was like, I think, 3 changes that he had to make to the film. A lot of them circled around whether people would have been able to follow the story or not, and they were more concerned with that. So that's why the changes were made.
Right.
And for me,
the studio gave him $5 more million too.
Yes,
late in the production.
And I really, you know, it took me 2 watches to really catch everything in this film, and it just shows you how, you know, complex some of this film, is, because you know, you really have to watch it. I mean, you could probably watch this 4 times and find something different every single time that you missed. For some reason, I missed the detective that he goes to talk to, the one that is drawing circles all over his wall.
He realizes there's something wrong going on in this world. And part of this, so Murdoch, he meets this hooker, and he...
tests himself, really.
Yeah, he tests himself to see if he really killed this girl, because he's not sure what's going on. And in the director's cut, there's actually... In the theatrical version, he just kind of leaves the room. And in the director's cut, it turns out the hooker has a daughter. He sees a daughter, he leaves the room, so it gives him more motivation for leaving the room.
Okay.
It's a minor thing. It still works either way. And at this point, he leaves the room, and then he... is this where...
This is where he's confronted...
By the strangers up by the strangers sign. By the sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's looking through his pockets, and he sees, you know, he had seen the Shell Beach postcard, which should have mentioned before. This is a big influence. You know, he sees it in this suitcase with the initials KH on here. Mm-hmm. Later we find out what that is, but looking at the Shell Beach postcard sparks these memories of the beach going through his head and a fire explosion. Doesn't know what it means. And he's taking more stuff out of his coat at this time when he's by the sign for Sunny Beach, the little billboard. And it's got, you know, newspaper clippings of all the murders that have happened.
Right.
And he's just like, you know, oh, my God, what does this mean? And so, you know, of course, the strangers show up. And, you know, they're like, oh, are you surprised at, you know, what you've done?
Or Mr. Hand.
Yeah, Mr. Hand. And
who is played incredibly well by Richard O'Brien.
Yes.
Just a really just creepy but yet smart, like, creature.
Yes.
Because, I mean, essentially, well, go on. We find out about this time what the strangers are.
Yeah, and so he tells them that, you know, he wants them to come with them. And then... You know, he tells him to sleep, just like he did the bookie, so he could go to sleep, and he resists. He doesn't go to sleep. And then he tunes, which, you know, their powers are
like telepathic
power. It's called tuning, and that's how they change everything around them. They're able to change the city, which you'll find out more later. And so he makes the ground just disappear from the bottom of this Dr. Hand. And he falls through, and so they're like, oh, he can tune, and then he makes the rest of the ground fall out.
Yeah.
He escapes.
And then, not before he makes the Shell Beach sign come down. It has like this rotating hand on it, and it comes down and hits one of the strangers in the back of the head. And at this point, we see the stranger die, and this creature comes out of his head.
Yes.
So at this point, as a viewer, you're even more confused, because here you are, you think this is like a city of some sort, and it turns out these strangers are like aliens. And
I think that's Mr. Wall that got his head cut off.
And the original script, like I said, the script went through several changes. There was more ideas that they explained that these aliens took over like dead bodies and stuff.
But yeah.
You just kind of assume it in this by seeing the alien come out of the head.
Yeah, they mentioned the dead corpses aliens. Later. Yeah, and they were going to be bugs. Yeah. Like, apparently they were going to be bugs. Well,
they thought it was overdone.
Yeah, they thought it was overdone. So they went with these aliens, and they don't even know how this city really came to be.
Right.
You know, there's, you know, two different, you know, thought processes. But, yeah, so, you know, he needs to go find his wife. Murdoch, you know, at this time he finds out that he does have a wife, mm-hmm. and that she's been looking for him, because Schreiber does mention it to him. And so he sees that he has these keys in his pockets. He goes and seeks them out, and seeks out the room that they belong to, and lo and behold, he finds his home. And his wife shows up, Jennifer Connelly, who is a beautiful jazz singer in this film.
Yeah.
And she showed up on the film on the screen, and I'm telling my wife, I was like, oh, Jennifer Connelly. And she's like, oh, she isn't even that cute. I was like, what?
Oh, please.
I was like, dude.
And what's funny is, in the original version, it's not her voice. In director's cut, they use her singing voice. For some reason, the studio, I guess, felt at the time that her voice wasn't good enough, and Alex Proyas was like, what? And that was the thing he fought against, and the director's cut, he was able to put her singing voice back in.
She has a very good jazz voice. Yeah. Like, it's her voice sounds built for jazz, kind of deep, you know, like a deeper tone for a female voice.
And this film has heavy film noir influences from it, and it doesn't say when the film takes place, but it very much looks like a 1930s, 40s, 50s look. And they went for that on purpose because they wanted it to look kind of timeless but kind of not new either.
Yeah,
and so jazz would have been very popular, and it's also, again, a sense to create a sense of confusion in the film to make it feel like this is a real world.
Yeah, that's another element that was used there. So, you know, he's telling his wife he doesn't think he murdered anybody. He can't be this person. He doesn't know what's going on.
Apparently, they have marital problems too.
Yeah,
you know that they allude to.
Yeah, that she maybe cheated on him, and so you know, he looks outside and he's like, what, whose car is that? She's like, it was a police officer. He gave me a ride home. I didn't know that he didn't leave. And so he runs out the door, and there's Bert's character. The officer's there, and he's like, you're coming with me.
You mean Hurt.
Yeah.
You said Bert.
Is it Hurt?
William Hurt.
William Hurt. I'm sorry.
Professor,
I don't know why.
Inspector Blumstead.
Yes. And so the inspector's there, and Jennifer Connelly just throws herself at him and tells John to run, and you know, a little humor there. They never listen to me. And so he takes off, runs after Murdoch. But of course, you know, Murdoch loses him. And Murdoch seeks out. That's whenever he seeks out the doctor. Right. So,
but before all that happened, yeah. though, too, whenever he first tunes and is able to kill one of the strangers, we finally see the stranger's world.
That's right.
The camera does this amazing thing where it pans down, showing that these strangers are underneath the city. And that's where we're introduced to Mr. Book, and they're amazed that he can tune. And they were like, they all said, we need to kill him. And then, of course, Mr. Book, he must be like their leader. And he shows up. He's like, no, what can we learn from this man? We must capture him and everything. And they discuss that that's where we discover their power is like tuning. And then at the same time, they start preparing for tonight's tuning of the city.
Yes.
Right before he goes and meets his wife.
And they also show, isn't this where they show the glimpse of Keith Sutherland's character, Dr. Schreiber? He's formulating these memories. He's like a dash of troubled childhood and rebellion.
It comes up right before the tuning.
Yeah, it comes up right before the tuning. And he's showing how he prepares these memories.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're asking him questions, you know, why is he able to tune? You know, why does he not sleep? And he's like, maybe, you know, he is, you know, maybe he's mutated.
He's evolved, yeah.
And he's evolved. And they're like, impossible. And he's like, well, this is what you're looking for.
We
now that you are found
sense it. Of their world of yeah. what these strangers are doing.
And yeah. they very much look a lot like Cenobites from Hellraiser.
There's some design from it, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, they all look like Pinhead without the Pinhead, really. Yeah. Even at the beginning, the little kid like chatters like the chat, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, that reminds me of Hellraiser so mm-hmm. much. Just the little kid chattering, which I believe there were two little kids that played that character.
They were twins, a boy and a girl.
Okay. Yeah, and so you see the machines that they use to tune the city, and things start changing. And
well, they put everybody to sleep when they change the city.
Yeah, they put everyone to sleep, and then they go. There's a scene with Dr. Schreiber where they're fixing these people's home, mm-hmm. and you can tell that they already have a nice home, but then the table gets longer.
They get richer.
They get richer.
The rich get richer.
The rich get richer. And so there's, even though it's dark, there's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek humor, mm-hmm. you know, here and there. And so I believe Murdoch is watching this go on.
Yeah, he's
in fact,
it's all happening.
He almost gets, he's like moving so he doesn't get crushed
yeah.
by the changes. He confronts the doctor, after the doctor has a talk with the inspector, because right. Connolly shows him the doctor's card, Mrs. Murdoch shows the inspector.
Well, no, Murdoch confronts him after the tuning.
Yeah,
so,
but
so bumps
but it was right. Wasn't it right after the inspector talked to him, or no?
Well, the inspector already talked to him before the tuning.
Okay, that's right. That's right. And so he, he gets angry and he knocks the inspector away. And Murdoch, you know, again has to, you know, run away. The strangers show up and Murdoch's gone. And that's whenever he finds out that he has an uncle, I guess, because he's looking at the postcard again and he realizes he has an Uncle Carl. And so he goes to visit Uncle Carl, who pulls a shotgun on him as soon as he walks in. And, you know, he's like, don't you remember me? I took care of you when your parents died. You had this book and you always wrote in it. And, you know, apparently, you know, the book has like no pictures in it.
Right.
It's very weird. You know, he's still very confused. At this time, they decide to take Dr. Hand or Mr. Hand, and they inject him with Murdoch's memory so that they can get a sense of, you know, what he might do, where he might go. Well, the memories that were supposed to be injected in him, of course, they didn't all go
right.
through. So he finds out about Carl, Uncle Carl. And they go there, and they confront him, but not before the inspector shows up, right?
Right.
And arrests him. So he's taken to the station, and they're asking him about the book. And that's whenever, you know, Murdoch starts questioning the inspector, you know, when's the last time you did something during the day?
Yeah.
He's like, well, I don't know. You know, I have you one better. He's like, how do you get to Shell Beach? Or no, do you know what Shell Beach is? It's like, yeah, yeah. He's like, well, how do you get there? Well, you take this road. He's like, and no one can tell him how to get to Shell Beach.
Right.
So this whole time he's been asking people how to get to Shell Beach. No one can tell him how to get there.
And Murdoch has awakened to some of this because earlier in the movie, the crazy former inspector, Blumstead, he's the one who's drawing the circles on the wall, and his wife thinks he's lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And, or not Blumstead, that's the main inspector.
Yeah.
Hesselbeck. And he meets Murdoch at the subway, because Murdoch decides he's going to try to take the subway to Shell Beach, and he tells me, he goes, you can't do it. You can't get out. There's no way out.
There's no way out.
And he says, I found a way out, and he throws himself in front of a train.
Kills himself.
And, you know, and that's where it kind of wakes Murdoch's eyes. You start realizing what this guy's talking about, because he tells him, sometimes one of us wakes up, and he goes, it happened to me. And he goes, and I realize what's going on.
Yeah.
And why the strangers didn't kill him in the first place. I actually read a review that might be the one subplot in the film. If this guy had woke up in the first place, how come the strangers didn't kill him?
Yeah, he should have killed him.
They allowed him to walk around the city being crazy.
I wonder if he hid somehow.
Or maybe they figured that was part of finding the human soul, which is what they're essentially doing. They're like, you know what, we're going to let him be and see if people believe him, because it's all a game. It's kind of a game to the strangers, a dark game in a way.
It really is.
And we find out more why later on.
Yeah, and so...
So Murdoch gets up in jail.
Yeah,
and
he
the strangers show up at the jail to look for Murdoch. But at this point, Blumstead helps him out. Blumstead's starting to figure out, after that conversation he had about when was the last time he saw daylight, Blumstead says maybe there's something to it. So they grab the doctor and him, and they're going to go look for Shell Beach.
Yep. And so, the strangers are in pursuit. They decide that, you know, they're going to grab some insurance. So they go in, they grab Murdoch's wife, Jennifer Connelly,
who is
at the ferry, docks, because that's where... You know, what her memories told her that she met him. And so, Hand is there, and he's like, I'm here because I met my wife here. And she's like, well, I met my husband here. He's like, really? What a coincidence. Yeah. So he ends up taking her, because he's talking about the memories that he has of her, you know, husband. So right. He takes her and... brings them to try and hunt down where they may have gone.
Right.
And there's just a wall that the doctor, the inspector, and Murdoch find of Shell Beach. After they take like a boat, it's like they have to take a canoe.
And there conveniently happens to be like giant hammers by the wall. I thought it was kind of funny.
Or is it a pipe?
Or pipes?
I think it's pipes.
And they
yeah.
start beating this wall to see what's behind it.
Yeah.
And this is. You know, it's funny because it's not the climax of the movie, but this is a climactic reveal in the film.
Yeah.
As they beat this wall open, and John tunes a little bit to open up the rest of the wall, and what's behind it is space.
Just space.
And the camera pulls back to reveal that the entire time the city is on, like, a giant spaceship. And it's a huge reveal for the film, and I remember seeing this originally, and this is the first time you ever watched it, so your memory's fresher than mine, but I'm like, wow, I honestly didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
You know, I really didn't. I had no idea they'd be on a spaceship when I originally watched it. I thought, okay, maybe it's just some sort of alien world that, you know, has humans and not like a spaceship. You know?
Yeah, I thought I was going to see ocean. I thought I was going to see daylight and ocean. And
like they had kept everybody in the city.
Yeah. Like this was a city that they had, you know, just secluded everybody in. But, you know, lo and behold, they're floating in space and the strangers show up. And Blumstead takes out, like, two of them, I think, shooting him.
Well, let's back up a little bit, too. While they're on the boat,
yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland reveals quite a bit to them.
Oh, yeah.
He says they're called the Strangers. They're here to see what makes us work, to find our souls. We get a lot of reveals in this exposition.
Yeah. They're dying.
They're a dying race, and they're looking for a way to maybe save their race, to see what makes them work. And Blumstead even asks him, well, where do we come from? And he says... None of us remember that.
Yeah.
So none of them know about Earth or anything like that.
They made him.
And he turns out that he tells them the memories are all fabricated. None of your memories are real. So there are a lot of reveals in this short scene before we reveal the spaceship.
Yeah. And he's basically like, you can stop them, John. You know, take this. And he hands him this, you know, injector. He had pulled a gun on him at one point and said, you need to take this now. You need to trust me. And, the inspector's like, no. And so, Murdoch takes
that
the...
That was right before they left for
That was right
Beach,
before
yeah.
they left, yeah. And he tucks this injector, you know, into his pocket, jacket pocket for safekeeping, you know, as so he says.
Yeah.
So whenever they capture Murdoch in the scene and they take him back to their lair...
Well, he threatens him with Anna, his wife.
Yeah.
So they take Murdoch back to the lair.
Even though they've already changed Anna's memories at this point. So they take him back and they put him on this big... kind of dial like he's going to be like human sacrificed, and they're going to join all of their collective knowledge with his and see if this saves them. And but instead
Schreiber
he takes the injector that John had out of his pocket and injects John in the head with that one instead of the one that they gave him.
And it's all this knowledge that tells John how to beat the strangers.
Basically.
It's these years of memories where Schreiber keeps appearing in his dreams and his memories, explaining him, preparing him for this day.
Yep, and he remembers himself floating up the stairs like the strangers do. And there's even an allusion to, you know, why he had to do this, because Mr. Book, the leader of them all, said that it takes, you know, lifetimes to master tuning.
Right.
And so it's almost like he injected a lifetime full of knowledge into his head, where he's just been trained.
Then the film all of a sudden goes in, but it worked. It had built this tension all this time for this epic battle, where Murdoch comes off of the thing he's attached to, and he just starts unleashing holy hell upon the strangers, basically destroying them.
Yes.
Using his telepathic powers to fight them. Even Mr. Book comes in, who's apparently the strongest of them all, and he fights him, and they have this huge fight where they end up floating up into the air, and he's able to push Mr. Book back into this water tower and destroy him, completely annihilates all the strangers in one sense. And it's a really cool scene with just incredible music done behind it. No dialogue. They just let the battle play out. And I love it because, like, and I've given Marvel flack for this sometimes. It's like, in the middle of an epic battle, they want to drop these one-liners. That's not how it would ever happen in a movie. I get it's a comic movie.
Yeah.
But in reality, if you're fighting, man, you're going to fight. You're not going to say a one-liner. And I love this scene in Dark City where it's just an epic battle there at the end of the film.
Yeah, it really is.
And it's not a super long battle. It's not overly drawn, but it's enough.
And it slows down, and Schreiber is like, you know, well, John, you know, what are you going to do?
It's like, you said I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to make this world how I want it to be.
Yeah. And he creates oceans.
That's his first thing. He's going to make Sunny Beach, or Shell Beach, sorry. Sunny Beach is over here in Galveston. but he's going to make Shell Beach, and who does he find there?
She's now called Anna.
He finds Anna. And, you know, he says, you know, he's going to go. I forget where he says he's going to go.
Right.
But she's like, you know, I'm going to go with you.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's where we leave off. And it shows that even though, you know, you strip people of their memories and you strip people of, you know, their past, that these two people, you know, are still coming together.
They can now make new memories.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's there's a lot of, you know, who are you? If they take away this, if they take away that, are you still who you are? You know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Equilibrium. Mm-hmm. You know, if they take away your ability to feel, you know, do you still have this? Are you still human? What makes you human? There's a little bit of that in here, a little bit, not a lot.
Yeah.
But you know, and he's able to transcend it, and you know. Right.
It's a remarkable film, and the only thing from the original script that made it into the final script was the idea that it was a detective, or it was a man who wakes up and is accused of murder. He's trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
So the script changed quite a bit from the time Alex Proyas wrote the original treatment before it got into David Goyer's hands, and then the filming script that almost happened didn't even have as much action in it. David Goyer brought a lot of the action in.
Yeah.
To add to the scenes of the film. And things like that. So it just shows you how much movies change over the years as they get made. They even used some of the sets for the Matrix films. They sold them to the producer of the Matrix.
Yeah, and you can really tell from the rooftops and the stairwells are very Matrixy.
And you know, it's amazing because I watched this, and Alex Proyas, who you know made The Crow and made this, and he went on. He made iRobot with Will Smith, and he made that Gods of Egypt that came out a couple years ago, which wasn't as well received. And he's got such a great eye for directing, and it's almost amazing that he hasn't made more.
Yeah,
really good films.
He really only makes a film every 4 years or so. Yeah,
like the Nick Cage film Knowing, which is actually good Knowing. Too. You know, and I've actually heard from people that say Gods of Egypt is way better than the critics make it out for. But as critically, as far as this film is concerned, this was quite. Roger Ebert, who's a well-known critic back in his day, put this on his best film in 1998. He even did a special commentary track for it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
On the DVD and Blu-rays. He absolutely loved this film. He said it was smart sci-fi, something the world needs instead of just, you know, ridiculous movies and things. He really loved it. A lot of critics really liked this. There are critics that didn't like it, and most of the critics that didn't like it were the ones that, it's funny, you go and read the things they said, it was mostly because they found it, they didn't like the confusingness of it.
Yeah.
They just didn't get it. And I think this is a movie, like you said, you had to watch it twice. You need to put yourself into the movie. And I and we've talked about this on the show many times before, I love science fiction that's absolute. It doesn't need to be overly explained. And a lot of the critics that didn't like this said that, like, well, this didn't make sense. This made, how come it wasn't explained to me? Sometimes you have to use your own imagination and think for yourself when you're watching a movie. You know, and it's very nitpicky stuff, but majority of critics really like this film. It sits at like a 7.5 on IMDb. You know, I don't take Rotten Tomatoes into account for older films like this because there's just not enough reviews on there for that.
I do look at like one of, you know, it's, you know, I watched it on Vudu, and Vudu community has this as a 4 out of 4.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that just goes to say that, you know, people that watch the film and get it and, you know, they enjoy it. And it's a really good film amongst people that just enjoy films, just enjoy movies in general, and you know, enjoy, you know, breaking things down and, you know, getting into, you know, the specifics of a film. And this is a very popular film for movie fans and movie critics.
And it's amazing you had never seen it, but watching it for the first time, I mean, it's a 20-year-old movie. How do you feel it holds up even watching for the first time?
Yeah, I feel it's really held good. Up. It was good that the film was very dark because it kind of made up for some of the CGI effects that you know that had aged.
It's quickly paced, so it doesn't. But it's not so quickly paced you can't keep up what's going on. But again, they paced it quickly because they wanted to give it this idea of confusion. And as you go on this journey with John Murdoch, you know.
Yeah, and it really is confusing. I mean, hopefully we weren't too confusing whenever we were explaining it because there's just a lot.
Maybe we did that on purpose.
Yeah, maybe we did on purpose.
Watching the movie.
Yeah. You know? Whenever you watch this film, you can tell that, you know, what, why we were like, oh, wait, but this happened. Oh, yeah, we forgot to mention this because it does move fast and it's very much like a maze, and which
who is also alluded to in the film. Schreiber.
By Schreiber, and
he has the maze with the rat, and he says it's a crude experiment.
Yes, yeah. And there's a lot of things that you don't realize. Like I just, you know, I noticed that, but I didn't realize the connection until you just said that. So that's another thing. But yeah, this is a movie. Like I said before, you can watch four times, five times. You're going to find something different. That alludes to another part of the film, you know, every single time. So,
you know, and this may be a bold thing to say, but I feel like this is a movie too. Like I just talked about and downloaded this, what people consider a horror classic, Halloween, that I didn't really care for.
Mm-hmm.
But I consider this a movie that if I'm showing film students, I would show them this movie over Halloween.
Oh yeah.
Of how to make a complex sci-fi film that you can follow what's going on, but yet also let it unravel at a pace that makes it a mystery and makes you study it. You know, I think this has been a really favorite film of mine for many years. I've watched it several times. It's funny that, you know, as much as we talk about the Spielbergs and George Lucases and James Camerons of the world, Alex Proyas has made two films that I absolutely love between this and The Crow that I've watched as many times as I've watched some other films.
Yeah, I think you could argue his, probably a lot of people would say his best film is iRobot, just because of what he had to work with.
But it had the star power, the budget, and all that. Yeah,
yeah. You had a lot of things going for you.
$30 million, and it looks incredible.
Yeah, it really does. And I'm a fan of his films. It's like I didn't realize he had done iRobot.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really liked iRobot. Will Smith's character was really good in the film, and then the ghost in the machine, the sci-fi horror. So, you know, this is another sci-fi horror film that was really good by Alex. Yeah.
But no, it's an excellent film. And if you've never watched Dark City, hopefully we turned you on to it. And go check it out because it's free on Vudu right now with ads. I don't know how long, you know, sometimes Vudu changes things every week. But you can find this movie in the $5 dump bins at Walmart and things like that. And it really is an excellent science fiction film if you've never seen it. For me personally, I might maybe put this in my top 10 science fiction films of all time that I've watched in my lifetime. I think it's that good. I think it holds up.
It's better than one of the Star Wars. Well, yeah, it's better than one or two of the prequels at least. Yeah,
yeah. It's an excellent film. I think it's and Rufus Sewell. I remember watching this back when it came out. Like, man, this guy's really good. And of course, it's great now. 20 years later, he's going on to star. Of course, he was in A Knight's Tale with the late great Heath Ledger, and he was in one of the two Zorro films.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was the Prince of Wales.
He was the bad Zorro film, the second one.
Yeah.
And the first Zorro film was good, but the second one's terrible. And then he's, of course, now in The Man in High Castle on Amazon Prime.
I really liked him.
I know
him
he gets rave reviews for that.
Yeah, Knight's Tale.
So a good movie. And it was interesting seeing Kiefer Sutherland, who was a guy who's like, who's like a manly guy that always plays, you know, like Jack Bauer and tough characters. He's kind of more of a broken down, getting told what to do character in this film.
He really is.
So it was interesting to see him play a different part.
He was forced to you know, do whatever the strangers wanted to do.
Yeah.
But, and he's got that little eye twitch.
Yeah. Yeah. And they gave him the very 1930s, 40s blonde split haircut.
Yeah.
But a really, really cool film. So go check out Dark City if you haven't. If you have checked it out, hopefully we brought some new insight to this movie, and maybe you'll pull it out of your DVD case and go back and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's it for the Dark City. But we've got some other things to talk about.
Man, yes.
We're almost an hour into the show today. We're going to have a little bit longer show today.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's a big week.
Yeah, it's a big week.
We've got a little sub-feature we're going to do, but we're going to do news briefs first because the news briefs are going to lead into the sub-feature, and that's why. So, but first of all, it's the final Sunday. We're recording on Sunday. I'm still behind on it, but it's Andrew Lincoln's last episode tonight of The Walking Dead. I still need to watch most of last season.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. I don't know if they're going to kill him or not. I would hope not because he's still alive in the comic books. Will the viewership is down? Is the show going to survive on Norman Reedus alone?
I don't think so.
I feel the same way. I think Walking Dead, AMC can talk a game how they wanted to go on for 10 or 15 years, but I think you need the end game at this point. If they don't kill Andrew Lincoln on tonight's episode, which y'all will hear this after it comes out, so you'll know, maybe come up with an end game, end the show in a couple years. Do like you did with the X-Files with David Duchovny when he left, and David came back to close out the show. Maybe we'll get Andrew Lincoln to come back later.
Yeah.
We'll see. But, I want to get caught up on it. I haven't given up on The Walking Dead. I just fell behind on it. I need to watch the rest of Season 8 on Netflix, and I'm DVRing Season 9. I know you haven't really kept up with it either. You kind of got behind on after the first Negan season.
Ever since I saw the end, I forget which season it was, but it was the one wherever Rosita? She made the fake bullet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or she got what's his face to make the bullet for her. And that one shot hit Lucille.
Right.
And didn't kill Negan.
Okay, so you're about halfway through season 7.
Okay.
So that was like the mid-season finale.
Mid-season finale. Yeah.
Okay, so you're not too far behind either.
Okay.
So the season and a half. So we'll see how it survives without Andrew Lincoln on the show. Yeah.
We'll see.
A casting announcement this week is we got some Marvel talk or some DC Marvel talk. Ewan McGregor apparently is going to play Black Mask.
Yeah.
In the Birds of Prey movie. I'm still not sure about a Birds of Prey movie. We'll see. But man, I love Ewan.
I always like Ewan.
In a lot of roles. It'd be interesting to see him play in a dark, sinister side. See him play Black Mask.
Yeah, man.
And he has that grim to him that he can kind of bring a sinister ability. I think Ewan's a great actor.
He really is. But I've seen his good side. You know, you've seen Big Fish before, yeah. And he was very bright and cheerful in that movie. And it's going to be weird seeing him play the exact opposite in this film as Black Mask.
So. Margot Robbie was great as Harley Quinn, so maybe between the two of them we'll get something interesting, more interesting than a Suicide Squad movie. So we'll see how it works out. There's been a lot of rumors this week that Marvel, they still haven't confirmed any of this, that they're going to do these miniseries shows on their Disney streaming service.
Oh, with Winter Soldier?
They semi-confirmed it, that Kevin Feige said, yeah, we're kind of working on it, but they never confirmed that it's going to be Loki or Scarlet Witch. Now apparently there's a rumor there's going to be a Falcon Winter Soldier miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
I think characters like that's good. Maybe give us some more background of what they've been doing or things are going on with these characters.
Yeah.
Besides what we see in the movies. But at the same time, maybe Falcon and Winter Soldier aren't strong enough for their own films. So maybe this is a way to see more from them.
Maybe. Like you said, it's just there's nothing concrete, really. We'll see where this goes. I'm definitely not opposed to it.
Yeah.
If it tells other aspects of the universe, if it finds a way to introduce other characters other than, the ones that we're used to seeing on the screen, then, I'm all for it.
We'll see where it goes. Of course, this weekend in theaters, Bohemian Rhapsody, which tells the story of the band Queen, and Freddie Mercury, they did the soundtrack for the original Flash Gordon movie back in 1980, of course. So there's some Flash Gordon news. Fox owns the rights to Flash Gordon. They've been trying to get a remake off the ground for years based on the 1934 character created by Alex Raymond. And we had the movie in 1980 starring Sam Jones, who we've had on the show. We interviewed Sam Jones. And I love Flash Gordon. It's definitely a movie we're going to cover eventually on the show. So apparently Julius Avery, who is directing the upcoming Overlord, for J.J. Abrams' character, the zombie World War II horror movie, has been picked by Fox to develop a Flash Gordon remake. I want this movie to happen so bad. I wanted Matthew Vaughn was going to do it, and I was like, that was the first time I was really excited about it, because I really think Matthew Vaughn, who of course made the original Kick-Ass and made the Kingsman films, I think Matthew Vaughn, and he made X-Men First Class, would have really had, would have made a good Flash Gordon movie.
Yeah.
And he stepped off, and now we got this new guy. I'm hearing good things about Overlord, but who knows? But Flash Gordon just feels like a character, because he's almost 100 years old, that is begging for a big screen remake.
Yeah, I mean, there's, why not? You know, we had, not so known characters come through before, like, you mentioned Kick-Ass, and then we had Scott Pilgrim, and they did pretty well from whenever they were out. So there's a market for it, you know.
Well, I would argue Flash Gordon's much more known character.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just trying to find something similar that, we could use to compare. But yeah, those movies did well, and Kick-Ass even had a sequel, even though it wasn't that great. We can do Sam Jones, probably coming back as a bad guy.
He'd be like a muscle guy on the planet Mongo.
Yeah, it would be cool.
Works for Ming or something. But I hope we get it made. This week, Netflix, released a short little teaser of Henry Cavill in the makeup as Geralt of The Witcher. Mm-hmm. I guess The Witcher is extremely popular. I'm not real familiar with it.
But
I guess it's a series of novels that's based on, and it's branched out into video games and comic books, and I realized the fan base for this. I guess he's like a monster hunter, and Netflix is going to do a series for it, and Henry Cavill is going to do it in the movie, so we'll see where it goes. He looks cool in the
park. He does look cool. The beard. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
I don't know much about it either, but I figure I'd give it a shout out because there's a lot of fans out there for it. And the last bit of news we have, it's going to lead into our sub feature. Red Dead Redemption 2 came out this week, and people talk about how much movies make at box office. This game, $725 million in its first week of release.
Wow.
And talk about entertainment power in video games. It's been one of the biggest video game launches in the last few years. Everyone's playing except me because I'm broke.
Yeah.
I love the first Red Dead, so I'm going to get this eventually. But that's phenomenal.
That's crazy.
Could make that much money in just a few short days. You think about Avengers or Black Panther or Star Wars Force Awakens, it made $936 million, Force Awakens, in its entire theatrical run. This video game made $725 million in the first few days of release.
That's crazy.
That's incredible. And yes, it's $60 a copy compared to a $10 movie ticket. That's still phenomenal numbers for a video game. So it got me thinking, man, we talk movies on the show a lot and everything, and we talk films. Has there been any, we've done an episode before where we talked about video games that we wanted to be turned into movies, but are there any movies that you wish you would have had a video game version of that you never got?
Yeah, I would say Braveheart.
Really?
Wouldn't that be cool? It's having Mel Gibson in a kilt, just killing guys.
Or like an open world type game.
Like an open world, yeah.
Trying to sack castles and... because you sacked castles back then. You didn't defeat it. You sacked them.
Yeah. I always thought that would be pretty cool. Just because it's something, that we haven't seen before. And it would be a cool little fighting or strategy game.
Yeah.
And having a World of Warcraft, and you just have this one character or something like that. Something that's similar.
Interesting pick.
Yeah. I tried to make this interesting.
I didn't go as far... We just talked Flash Gordon. I always thought a Flash Gordon game would be cool, where you're on the planet Mongo and you're having to fight Ming and his enemies. Just an old maybe hack and slash game, doing different levels, and Ming's got these different bad guys you have to fight. And eventually you get to Ming, the Merciless, and you fight him. There's got to be a scene where you ride the space cycle, the original Flash Gordon.
Space cycle.
I always thought that would be cool. I don't want a fancy RPG-style game, just an old hack and slash where you're fighting Ming's warriors and you're going through the planet Mongo. And there's a level where you rescue Dale, or a level where you rescue the Doctor, and just maybe have a fun hack and slash Flash Gordon game like that. That was one I had picked. Did you have another one?
Yeah, I know this is going to be hilarious, but an Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, and like the same style as Diablo 3, and you have different monsters and these different levels of hell that you have to kill. It's just freaking awesome if you just have like someone talk like Abe Lincoln saying random things. Maybe he uses his hat like Random Task was it Random Task or am I thinking of, is that the Austin Powers version?
I only watched it one time.
Yeah. I can't think of his name, but the Asian guy that throws his hat.
Oh, I know you're talking about Dr. No.
Yeah, from Dr. No. Yeah. As if, you know, he'd throw his hat and chop some, you know, vampire's head off. That's and at funny. The end, he's got to fight the devil. Yeah. That'd be friggin' awesome. That's just hilarious. Abraham Lincoln with an axe.
Was Rufus Sewell in that movie? No, the guy kind of looks like him.
Yeah, he kind of looks like him.
Yeah, that's right. I think there was rumor at the one point he was going to be in it, but I don't think he was in it. I feel like he was in that movie now. Now I have to look it up.
Abraham Lincoln.
But my other game would have been, and I kind of cheat on this one because I know we've had games based on it, but I always wanted a really good X-Men game. Rufus Sewell was in it.
He was in it?
Yeah, I thought he was in that movie. He didn't play Lee, but he was in the movie. I knew Rufus Sewell was in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I always wanted a really good X-Men game in the style of, like, and this also would go for the Justice League, too, either one, where not exactly like the Ultimate Alliance games from Marvel, mm-hmm. but maybe more of an open world where you maybe only play as two or three X-Men, have a small team, but the other characters appear in the game. I've always wanted, there's been a good Wolverine game or two, and there's been a good Batman game and stuff, but we've never had a really good X-Men game. We've had subpar X-Men games over the years. And I always would like to see an X-Men game where you can level up your mutant characters and you fight the various bad guys. And I always wanted I love the franchise so much that I've always wanted a really good X-Men character game. And I've got one more if you don't have one more.
Go for it.
There was a game made for the computers back in the day, but I always wanted a good Buckaroo Banzai game.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Where you'd have to go around to discover who the Electroids were and go to the other dimensions. And I always thought, and fight the World Crime League. I always wanted a good, I think Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai would make for a really fun game if done
That would
correctly.
Be pretty cool.
So that's one that I had. And that's all I had on my list of video games I would like to see as movies.
Yeah, I was gonna
see his video games. I said it backwards.
If I could improve one, I know Space Jam was a video game. It was a bad video game, but if they would have made like a Space Jam in the same kind of style as 1995's NBA Jam, yeah. where you just have, you know, Bugs Bunny shooting,
that would be fun.
You know, doing a slam dunk, boom shakalaka, and just, you know, that kind of stuff, and you go against the Monstars. That would be pretty cool, but we didn't get that.
I think the only other thing, I know there's been a lot of Batman games, and we've had excellent ones with the Arkham series, and they did do a Batman Begins game, but I think a Batman detective style game in the Christopher Nolan universe would have been cool too, you know, where you had to figure out what the Joker was doing. And I don't know how you would have done it because the movie is such a crime saga. But, you know,
yeah.
I would have liked to maybe have seen a Batman video game in that universe.
Make it 8-bit like the 89.
Superman. I'm still waiting for a great Superman game. There's been a lot of rumors that Rocksteady has the rights, the same company that made the Arkham games, and maybe it will come true. I've always wanted to see a great Superman game.
Cause yeah.
The bad guys are there. You can really make a great Superman game and have it really well done. So we'll see. Video games aren't going anywhere. Movies aren't going anywhere. Lots of movies coming out over the years, and lots of video games will come out too. So maybe we'll get some of these games. Before we get out of here today, we got to preview next week's movie. This week in the news, and I saved this for now because I had it in the news briefs, but I wanted to lead into our next movie. Ridley Scott apparently is going to make a sequel to Gladiator. I'm not sure how, because Russell Crowe's character dies at the end.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a prequel. Maybe it's a new Gladiator. I still can't figure out how it can be a prequel because he's not a Gladiator until this movie. But my buddy Sean Shirley, who I've known for years, he commented on our Facebook group when I put up the Gladiator news about how this one of his favorite films of all time. And I was like, you know what? Let's do Gladiator.
Yes.
Helmet and tell me your name.
My name is Gladiator. Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance.
Today I saw a slave become more powerful than the Emperor of Rome.
They said you were a giant. I shall cheer for you.
At my signal, unleash hell.
Am I not ready?
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
Hey, it's Alfonso Berry. Listen to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
It's a really good film, and I haven't watched it in a long time, so I'm kind of looking forward to watching it. So we'll talk Gladiator, which means we're going to kind of have a mini Oscar break. We're going to be doing back-to-back Oscar-winning movies
here. Yeah.
We won't say what the next one is, but we're going to do Gladiator first, and we're going to do another Oscar winner the next week. And I remember seeing Gladiator in theaters, and I've always loved almost anything Ridley Scott does. This was Russell Crowe at the height of his popularity, of course, and he won Best Actor for this. And it's a really remarkable film, one that should be fun to rewatch and talk about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and whenever you mentioned this to me, I was like, yes, finally, a reason to say, are you not entertained?
Which is, I just remember, watching this and being really impressed with the bringing Rome to life.
Yes.
I remember that being something that really impressed me when this movie came out. And I probably haven't watched it in 10 years, honest. And I know I saw it in theaters. I did see it in theaters because I think everyone did. It was a big event when it came
Maximus
out.
Maximus Borelis, and I will have my revenge in this life or the next.
So Matt's going to look forward to doing his Russell Crowe impersonations next week.
Yes.
We saw Gladiator on the Rebel Radio Podcast, so that should be fun. As always, go to therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on social media. Listen to us on whatever app you want to listen to. Buy a t-shirt while you're there if you want. And we have some news that Arnold will be back this week.
Yes.
On our YouTube channel. Comics. He's been really busy filming Terminator.
I bribed him with a cigar. Yeah. I know he likes those Cuban cigars. So.
Well, he's been busy filming Terminator, but he stopped off at Alamo City Comic Con last weekend here in Texas.
That's
so he
right.
had time to do that. So he says he's promising he's reading a comic for us this week. I've heard maybe even two episodes.
Maybe two.
So we should have some new comics for Arnold this week for us, for you all on your YouTube channel. So go there and check it out. And thank you, as always, for listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. We do appreciate all the support. And until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And as always, just
go there and do it.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. My name is Sean Patrick Flannery, and I hope you dig the podcast.